What is up? What is going on, everybody? This week you may not be able to breathe, but either way, I'm sure you're not going to want to open your mouth. We'll talk about another side of the song. Welcome back, everyone, to another new episode of The Three Cool. As always, I'm one of your three co-hosts, Ethan Klein, and here with me this week, Mike Duranik and Brad Miller. Gentlemen, how are we doing this evening?
Better than all the turkeys at Thanksgiving. Oh,
God. I'm just so glad that we're making turkey baster jokes right out of the bat. And so thanks for that, Brad. And, I am here and ready to talk this movie that was evidently our group pick for the month. I found out right before we hit record, although I had never seen it, and I swore that this was just Ethan's pick. But Ethan, why don't you lead us in?
Yes, this week we are talking the 2016 horror thriller Don't Breathe. I don't know what else to say about it off the top without giving away anything or without maybe throwing up. So I'll ask the question. I don't know. So I don't think either of you guys have seen it, right? So the question's going to be different. I had seen this, so I guess I'll answer first. Usually I ask the guys here what their first experience with it was. Did they see it in theaters, all this stuff. So I have seen this once before, and I will answer with that I saw it in my house in college. My one buddy and I would watch horror movies in college. We were the only two that would be willing to watch them. I handled them much, much better than he did. I don't really know why he continued to watch these things, because he did not handle them well. And this one I do remember was one of the more, I don't want to say better experiences. This one stuck with me. I'll say that. It's one of the ones I distinctly remember. I honestly couldn't tell you half of the ones that we watched. But I will also say in my defense, because, you know, I didn't steer you guys away from this pick, this is the first time I've seen this movie sober, and it was a much different experience than 5 years ago when I watched it. So that is how I will defend myself. So I'll ask you guys the tweaked version of this question. Did you know anything about this movie? Did you bring anything into this viewing? Any knowledge of Don't Breathe?
So, to let you off the hook a little bit, Ethan, I did suggest this be our group pick last month, and we discussed this, and it's because the trailer that they did for this movie was very, very good. It was the right amount of freak you out versus excite you versus like, okay, I've got to see this. Now, I think in their defense, they did a great job of leaving out turkey baster jokes or any, artificial insemination things, because that's where this movie jumped the shark for me. I thought it was just a house robbery gone wrong, and that this guy was trying to hurt them for breaking into his house. I had no idea to the level of why he was trying to hurt them or what secrets he was trying to protect. So in my defense, outside of that, this is a pretty good movie. And but by the time you sprinkle that in and get some of that stuff in there, it definitely makes it not such a great movie. But I knew that it was a thriller. I knew that it was going to keep you on the edge of your seat. And in my defense, had no idea about the proud papa moments.
So Brad just gave us the movie equivalent of, other than that, how was the play, Mrs. Lincoln? So.
Well done, Mike. Well done.
Saturday night, having a hard time falling asleep, and I'm like, well, I got to watch this either Saturday night or Sunday night, so it might as well be tonight. So about long towards midnight, 12:30, somewhere in there, I decided to start this movie.
Oh, God.
I did finish it, and so the first and only time I will ever watch this movie in my life was very early Sunday morning. right before we recorded this. And what did I carry into it? Well, first, I couldn't find the movie. I had to look back through the notes because I got it confused with the No Doubt song, Don't Speak. Incidentally, not this movie, but Don't Breathe. Once I found it, I knew that it was a horror movie, and I thought that it was about a home invasion gone wrong. And so that's about what I carried into it.
Right before we get into the Rotten Tomatoes game, to Brad's point, this was one of the best horror movie trailers I've ever seen. It's freaky, it's frightening. The premise of this movie is fantastic, right? That is terrifying. The notion that you should have the upper hand in a situation, but you don't because this guy is so skilled that you literally can't even breathe or you will die. Right? I mean, they took that notion into Quiet Place, which we've talked about. And Quiet Place is freaking great. Probably because the Quiet Place didn't have any dude choking on his own googly juice, right? Like that, like that's where there was one big decision that they made in this movie that set it off the rails.
Wait, so three grown men talking about this are going to go with googly juice?
Well, you know, I don't know. I didn't want to get too graphic. Before I get on too much of a tangent, Rotten Tomatoes game. And I think it's going to be one of the most interesting versions of this game we've ever played. And Mike has to be, this will prove it. This will definitively forever prove if Mike cheats. Because we already know probably the score he would give this movie. But Mike, what do you think the sitting critic score for Don't Breathe is on Rotten Tomatoes? And remember, Mike, this movie got a sequel.
Oh my gosh.
I didn't know it had a sequel.
Well, unfortunately, I did. Won't be seeing that either. So, all right. So where I would put it is quite a bit lower than where I'm about to put it. I don't think that this would have, it couldn't have been rotten and gotten a sequel. So it's gotta be fresh. And I think 60 is the cutoff for fresh. So I'm going to let you pick rotten or fresh, and I'm going to go with 60. And if it is higher than that, I've got some serious questions for the critics.
You're not too far off from where I was going to go. I really, really want to say 59, but I think it might be a touch higher, and I'm going to say 61 to try to snipe you for the win.
Well, fellas, we've had moments in the history of the show where someone is so wrong, it's hard to really give them credit for being right. But if we're just playing about who got closer to the number, Brad did win. And I guess we've already given away what your guys' answer will be to this next question. The audience has this as a 79. The critics have this at an 88%.
What?
On Rotten Tomatoes. The critics came around, poor choice of words for this movie, gave the sequel a 44%, while the audience gave the sequel an 85%. So this franchise,
wow,
is beloved if you're going off of Rotten Tomatoes. So, Mike, since you've had such a great poker face, I'll let you go first. Is Rotten Tomatoes correct? Is this an 88% movie?
The critics would still be wrong if they took the 88% that you said that they had this at. And what did you say they had the sequel at? A 44?
Yeah.
If they took those and averaged them and came out at a 66, the critics would still be wrong, but at least they wouldn't be laughably wrong. So, you know, last week we talked about Guardians of the Galaxy at a 92. I think of some of the upper 80s, lower 90s movies that we've watched, and then you're going to put this in there. I would be curious to sit down with a critic who or a room of critics, because this would basically mean 88 out of 100 critics gave it a thumbs up, right?
Oh, yeah.
So I would like to sit in with a cross section of those 88 and just ask them to explain to me what this movie's redeeming quality is. Not, as we're going to talk about, what it might have been had it not gone off the rails, but as a completed product, what is the redeeming quality of this movie? I would love to have that conversation with them and then tell them they're all wrong and that maybe I should be reviewing movies.
Yeah, I'm trying to rack my brain to figure out how anyone would justify a score like that. Even from the very beginning, to why in a horror film or a thriller do you put the fact on there that he catches her? You know, like, he's dragging her down the street in broad daylight, and this movie starts at night. So you know before you even start that at some point she's either dead or seriously injured, and he's dragging her through the street, which took away a lot of the climax of, was she traps that dog in the trunk, and, you know, it's like, okay, she's going to get out of the car, and it's like, all right, now where's the guy? Is he going to come? You know he's going to come, because at some point he gets her, did. You know? And, okay, that's enough googly sorry, juice sorry. Jokes, but, but I, even that choice, that's not the type of movie that you give away that, you know, that part, because I guess I don't understand the choice of doing that, because you want to leave something to the imagination of, okay, does she get out? What happens, you know? And so there's that. The acting is not that great. It wasn't particularly scary either. Like, I wasn't that, you know, it wasn't that, wasn't on the edge of my seat as much as I was hoping, I guess I should say. When I saw the preview for this, I thought, like, okay, this is finally the one. This is the one that's going to just scare the crap out of me. You know, like, these people are stuck in this house. They can't get out. They can't even breathe. You know, like, just the premise of it is, they did a very good job. I was super excited to see this. I was very let down, I will say, and kind of embarrassed that I pushed the group towards this. So, yes, very clearly I would say that 88 is not the correct score for this movie.
Oh, they're wrong. But I will say, I think 88% of this movie could get on board with it being an 88. Like, I really do think, I mean, it sounds like maybe Mike and I are a little more in line. I don't know. I think the first, you know, three quarters of this movie really does a great job of delivering on this premise. Like, I think that the beginning parts of this movie is scarier than The Conjuring, which is the other, like, major horror movie that we've done. Like, The Conjuring, it's, I mean, we can get in a whole nother conversation about the, you know, existential stuff and all that, and the, you know, demonic stuff and all that stuff. But the scariest parts of The Conjuring is the images, right? Like, the looks of that witch and those creatures and all that. The scariest parts of this is that it's literally this guy 2 inches from their face, and you put yourself in that spot. Like, the first time I watched this, I watched it in a basement with the lights off, like, the setting, and that makes a difference, stuff like that. And I remember, like, holding my breath when he walked by them. What's this guy gonna do? And I think where they were headed was a great plan of, because at the beginning of this, like, is he going too far? Is he reacting too much by now, like, borderline torturing these people? Yes. But again, subverting expectations. At the beginning of this, these three broke into his house. He's defending himself to a degree. Obviously, you know that there's going to be a little bit more, but initially, he's defending himself. And if they would have just left it at, if they would have just left it at the twist of he is kidnapping and punishing the person that hurt his kid, right? Like, if they left it there, they just made that one decision. I'll keep my jokes, but it is they made one decision, because this is an R-rated horror movie and we got to do something wild, right? Like, no, you don't. He can just be a creepy old dude that keeps someone in the basement, because he's a creepy old dude that keeps someone in the basement. He doesn't also have to be a rapist. Like, you can make him a bad person without that, right? Like, it's just that one decision. I really do think if they would have just had it be that he had that girl in the basement, and now he's just going to kill these people for finding out, right? Like, I think then we're talking about an 80-85% movie. They just went too far. Because I am terrified for certain portions of this film. I will say that.
Yeah, I was hoping to be more terrified. Maybe that's why I was let down. I think there's a couple scenes that jump out. The part that, like, I enjoyed the most are when he's, like, quickly moving through the house and they just have to, like, dodge him. But I will say the thing that I thought was strange is that before I get to that point, that scene in the basement too, after he had shut the lights out and she's walking towards him and just about gets to him, and the other guy yells her name and, you know, he goes after him, like, that part had me on the edge, you know, like, is she going to get there or whatever? But the part that I guess I also can't really explain is his skills seem to get stronger as the movie went along. When, like, to not hear them in the house at the beginning, to not hear that guy in his room or know that guy's in his room, like, later on he smells the shoes. Like, how could he not smell, I don't know, cologne or shampoo or different fragrances on those people, you know, to not know where they're at in the room when they're all standing right there after he had killed the first guy? Like, at first I was a little bit surprised, thinking, like, okay, his other senses aren't that heightened compared to what you're led to believe. And then all of a sudden, like, you know, he's almost superhuman when he's pulling her out of the ductwork and knowing where they're at. And, you know, like, just, I don't know. His skills definitely got more and more enhanced as the movie went along, and I didn't really care for that. I don't know if you guys noticed that or thought that at all, but yeah, just a lot of peculiar choices that they made. I think this could have been a lot better. They definitely needed to leave out the insemination stuff. And I also found it curious that he said, I'm not a rapist, yet I would argue that that's exactly what he is by doing that. I don't see how that's any different than using a body part for the same thing. But yeah, I guess a murderer and a kidnapper, and, you know, but he's got his morals. He's not gonna rape somebody. So yeah, I don't know. Just interesting, kind of let down. Was hoping for more, and maybe that's my fault for just walking into it with too high of expectations.
Well, I didn't walk into it with really any expectations, and so I don't know that it's your fault. You know, Ethan, I think that there was an idea here that could have worked, and certainly I agree with both of you that when he was revealed to be a rapist, a kidnapper and a rapist, that's when this thing fully jumped the shark for me. But while, you know, I've watched enough horror movies in my life to know that you can't always or even often expect people to do things that make sense. You know, things like, it was even, so you leave the shoes outside of the house. And again, I watched this in the middle of the night. And so I'm thinking, like, well, why did they do that? They weren't even that quiet once they were in the house, right? It's an old house. It was completely lost on me. Or, you know, the critique of why would they have brought a gun in if they weren't willing to kill the guy? And instead, now you're in this entire situation. Why would you shoot the gun to bust the lock? You're not going to look around and try to find a different way to get into the basement. I don't know. It just seemed like everything about what they did as they entered the house and on forward didn't make a whole lot of sense. I think that your critique about him, his skills rapidly improving, his other senses rapidly improving, is a great point, Brad, because if you take where he's at the final, you know, 20 minutes or so of the movie, compare that against what he seemed to be when they came in the house, those two don't really add up. So I think that, I guess what I'm saying, Ethan, is there are, in my opinion, more flaws with this movie than even just the completely unnecessary, got way too cute to try to make a hook plot twist there at the end that ruined it. I think that there was an idea of this that was not bad, but I think that they were so afraid of redoing the same old movie, or some variation of the same old movie, that then they just layered mistakes on mistakes. And then by the time they got to the big mistake, I was like, all right, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah, I think, you know, you just look back a couple episodes when we did Wind River, and they discuss, and the central part of that movie is that some of, you know, the same subject matter. There's a way to handle that with class, and there's a way to do it
with googly juice
without that, and to tell a story, to actually tell a story. And then there's, and this goes right to the director, because he wrote and directed this. His name's Fede Alvarez. He remade Sam Raimi's Evil Dead a few years prior, then this, and he really hasn't done anything else since, because for whatever reason, I don't know. But that should not be, hey, we got 15 minutes left to make this a full hour and a half movie. You know what we'll do? Like, no, like, be a little more creative. Be better. Come up with something. Doesn't even have to be more original. And even if you're going to do this plot line, you didn't need to have there. If you find me the person on this planet that said, you know what really made this movie for me? I needed to see that. I needed to see that whole thing play out the way that it did. I will find you the person that shouldn't be in a movie theater around people, or potentially within 500, you know, yards of a school. Like, that's not the selling point, nor should it be. And they made it that.
Well, you know, even more simply put, right? And I think this is what you were saying, but I really want to draw it out. If they decided that they needed to make the twist that he had kidnapped the girl who had killed his daughter, would it have not played better and done less damage to the movie if it was simply, you took my daughter from me, so I'm kidnapping you, and now you're my daughter?
Yeah.
100%. Right?
And I thought that's where they were going with it when he first started talking about it. I thought he was just going to say, and then she became my daughter, and now you're going to become my daughter, you know. And you're right, Mike, that would have played better. And also, this might be a bad take or a hot take maybe, but like, to me, it would have played better if he just didn't use the artificial stuff and, you know, just didn't have that moral compass and did it naturally. You know, like if he said, this is the choice I'm making and this is what I'm going to do, like, to me, that would have played better as well. Like, the whole thing about, like, here's where I draw the line and I'm not going to do this, but yet I'm willing to kidnap this person and make them give me a child. Like, that part just didn't play well with me. I think if he had just admitted, like, I'm going to torture her and keep her, and oh, by the way, I want a child, so here's what you're going to do, you know, and then after I get my child, you're going to die. Like, if he's psychotic, let him just be psychotic. You know, there were just a lot of weird choices with that. Sorry, I think I interrupted the last thing you were saying about your point there.
No, I think you raise an interesting point there, although I will say you're using the term moral compass really, really loosely, right, with this guy. But I do think, again, it was like they tried to make him – he was on the surface totally a redeemable murderer, right? These people broke into his house. He's blind. He doesn't know what's happening. It's, you know, you can get almost behind that idea. Then they decide to hook it that he is, you know, at a minimum, a kidnapper. And then you go into this where he's raping her. And then it's almost like they said, well, we still have to make him somewhat redeemable, right? Because he's the good guy in this. And that's where I walked away going, like, okay, so at the end of this movie, the girl gets away. Do I feel good for her? No, not really. He still lives. Do I feel good for him? No, not really. Like I said on my name here, I just feel bad for the dog. That's ultimately, like, I came away from this movie, and that was my takeaway, was the dog was in a bad situation. I feel bad for the puppy.
Well, the puppy returns in the sequel, and in fact, in the sequel, there is no moral gray area. He's the hero. I never saw it, but just from the previews, and they all openly, it's basically the same premise, but it's like a gang of murderers that break into his house, and he just goes Rambo. And I don't know if there's a way you can be more out of touch with your own franchise, but you flew the coop on him being a, like, that's not, nope. Like, you don't get to do that. Yeah, go ahead, Brad.
Wait, question. So I'm watching this and they leave the ending ambiguous, and I thought, oh, they're going to have a sequel. So now you're telling me that they actually did follow through with the sequel, and in no part was it him going after her and finding her to get revenge. It's an entirely different story where people break into his house and he does this. So they had a logical sequel there that they could have done, and they chose not to? Is that, that's what you're telling me?
Yeah, no, he like, he helps take care of a little girl, and she gets taken by her dad, who's a part of the gang.
Liam Neeson is now blind. Okay, got it.
Yeah, and then he goes after them and just like kills them all. But he's a hero because he's protecting a little girl.
And this, I'm just speaking right now to the 88 and 100 critics who gave this a thumbs up. This is why you can't give movies like this your approval, because it makes the studios, the producers, the writers think, you know what we should do is we just need to go right back to this. People loved it. Look at this. It's an 88%.
Well, yeah, I want to know those 88. Was it a like full go? Like, yeah, you should go see this. You'll love it. Or was it like a, you know, there's a part like where, like how certain was that green light?
Or were they just so traumatized by everything that happened in the back third of this movie that they were like, we've got to lie and say it's good to punish other people? Because I'd believe that more than the other two.
It could be that. So that's, I mean, I don't know how much more we can say about it. There's, you know, the people that star in this movie, the kids, there's not a ton we can talk about with them and their careers. Dylan Minnette is the only one that's really had much else. We talked about him in Prisoners, but it's not like he has a ton. He got a run on an equally ill-advised Netflix television show called 13 Reasons Why. If you ever want to punish yourself for longer than an hour and a half, go ahead and watch that. Three seasons of that, by the way, I think. Maybe four. Stephen Lang, though, is the one worth talking about of the cast. He plays simply called the blind man. Dude's been working for 40 years. He's had a really long career. For me, it goes right to two films. He is the main bad guy in the Avatar film, which we mentioned last week with Zoe Saldana, and then a movie near and dear to, I know, both Mike and I's hearts. He's Ike Clanton in Tombstone. But the dude's just had such a long career. And he, I mean, again, aside from whatever decisions the people who wrote this movie made, he has nothing to do with that. I think he is really good as the blind man. The physicality that he had, you know, the movements that he makes, the voice that he uses. I mean, yes, he still sounds like himself, but the cadence that he had, like, he's fantastic as a brooding, terrifying figure. Like, I have nothing ill to say about Stephen Lang in general or him as this role, because I've always been a fan when he pops up and stuff, and I think he did a really good job.
Two thoughts on this. One, I agree with you. Given the script, he did a fine job with the role. No qualms there. You know, once you sign on for the movie and you commit to the part, all you can do is do the part to the best of your ability. And I think he definitely did that. I've enjoyed him in other things, and certainly he'll forever be Ike Clanton to me. I would watch 13 Reasons Why, not all three seasons, but the only one that I actually watched, which is the first one, as much as I would never want to watch that again, I would watch that again annually to never have to watch this movie again.
Oh, trust me, Mike.
I'll still take this.
Yeah. What followed after that first season was far and away worse than the back end of this movie. Trust me, I promise you.
Well, at least I didn't end up watching that. Unfortunately, we're not watching, we're not group picking bad Netflix shows for future episodes, right?
That might be next year. Do you guys have a favorite scene?
I thought that the scene when he killed the lights in the basement was probably the most well done scene in terms of building some of the suspense and the tension. And so I'll go with killing the lights in the basement as the my favorite scene.
I think there's about a 10-minute stretch where from the time he sits up in the bed until the time he walks past the other guy in the hallway after he comes back into the house, and just watching him move around the house and just kind of trying to figure out what skills he does and does not have. Somehow I would lump all of that into my favorite parts. And I think it's because I'd never seen anything like that in the movie. And you know, when you've seen as many movies as we have over the years, to see something you've never seen before is entertaining. So I'm just going to go with that.
I think mine is when he first kills, Money. Like the kind of the, oh shit, like how quick he did that. And then the realization that there's more than just him in the house. Like I thought that was the moment that really kicked the movie into overdrive. You guys may not have a favorite line. Can I give the worst line of the movie?
Yeah, I think that given this is appropriate. Yeah.
Just because he's blind don't mean he's a saint, bro. Oh, cool. Ah, I didn't think so. That was never a qualifier for me of someone's good nature. Thank you for that. Thank you for clarifying that. That was the worst line of the movie. I don't know if you guys have anything that can top that, but
no, I don't believe so. I'm curious as to where this landed for you guys. It is not at the bottom of my list. There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. There's 6 movies below this one for me. Where did it end up for you guys?
Gentlemen.
No way.
We've got a new Bad Boys is off the hook. Bad Boys for Life.
No way.
I would never want to watch either of these again. But if you told me I had to watch one of these again, give me Bad Boys all day, every day. I never want to see this movie again. And I'm hoping that now that we're done recording this podcast, I can find a way to scrub it from my memory. I'm going to go some Eternal Sunshine and just be like, look, I need you to just very surgically remove all memories of this movie so that we can just be done with it. It is number 81 out of 81.
Wow. And
boy, do I hope we never see anything or do anything on this podcast that unseats it.
That's shocking. It's bottom 5 for me, but there's still a gap. That is wild. That I was going to ask the question if it got down there for you guys.
For me, I have one of, I think Mike ranked one of my really low ones really high. And below this for me, I have V for Vendetta, Red Eye, Austin Powers,
whoa!
Silence of the Lambs, Bad Boys, and Hellboy.
You put Hellboy below Bad Boys?
Yeah, that was a whole talking discussion on when we did the Hellboy podcast, Ethan. Oh, I guess that was not very memorable for you.
I mean,
well, I had, of course, Bad Boys holding on, but I'll give my bottom 7 here, 75 through 81, because a couple of them did overlay with you, Brad. 75, I had Austin Powers. 76, Hellboy. 77, Election. 78, Brad's favorite, Monsters Ball. 79, Footloose. 80, Bad Boys. And 81, the once and now forever champion at the bottom of the list, Don't Breathe.
I don't have mine pulled up in front of me, but I do know I put it on my bottom 5. And it's worse than V for Vendetta, Brad.
Yeah, and I have, you're right, Brad. I've got V for Vendetta quite a bit higher. I've got it all the way up at 22, so.
Well, mm-hmm. Mike, hopefully this is the last you'll ever have to talk about it. And to anyone who was not prepared for certain things in this film, we apologize. But if nothing else, we keep you on your toes. That was our conversation of Don't Breathe. Next week, I mean, a movie that involves none of the things we've discussed tonight. We are talking Kevin Costner and Brad's pick to kick off the month of September with Tin Cup, one of my favorite sports movies. Love getting a golf movie in here. Not a ton of those out there. But, you know, we've already talked Happy Gilmore. We're going to go with Tin Cup next week on the show. And I'm not even going to say the name of the movie we just got done talking about, just so Mike can start his therapy sessions. But other than that, guys, for Mike, for Brad, I'm Ethan, and we'll see you next time.